What's up, squeakies?
Kevin, you're my favorite.
Hey, you're my favorite. Turn to Revelation 8. That's my favorite. Revelation 8 and 9. We're going to blow through two chapters today, believe it or not, and some pretty crazy stuff goes down. I think you guys are going to find it pretty interesting. Have you guys ever heard the phrase, just the tip of the iceberg? Have you guys heard that before?
Yeah,
a few of you? Okay. Well, the idea is something that just happened, if it was just the tip of the iceberg, that means it was like, it was just the beginning. Just the very beginning of something that will happen or could happen. A good example, I remember when my mom got her first cell phone, wireless phone. It looks something like this, okay? Now, of course, this one's fancy enough that it has a little battery adapter that plugs into your car cigarette lighter, but without the cord, it looked like this, okay? This was my mom's first cell phone. And I remember when she got this, I was like, that is amazing. There's not even a cord. How do you, can make calls on that anywhere? That's awesome, you know? I was always the guy like Napoleon Dynamite who had like the 30-foot phone cord that like stretched out his front door, you know what I mean? And so everywhere you went to make a phone call, you had your cord connected. And so to think of a phone without a cord would just blew my mind, you know? Now, this was like back in the 80s, and of course, we've come a long way in our phones. Look at where we've come now. We can do all kinds of stuff. In fact, I'll take a picture of you if you don't mind. Do you mind? Okay, here we go. Ready? Take a picture. Oh, look how pretty you are. Very nice. So, you know, we can do all kinds of cool stuff with our phones. I love these two different ads right here. This guy from the 80s is looking all snazzy with this phone, except it looks more like a walkie-talkie. Can you imagine if you got this as your phone, you know? Like, you can barely even fit it in your pocket. Most purses, you couldn't even fit this. It's like this huge walkie-talkie niner-niner, you want to say on there, you know? But it is. It's like a nunchuck. But when those came out, I remember thinking, this is like cutting-edge technology. I can't believe this. And in reality, what it was just the tip of the iceberg, just the very beginning of what could happen. Another example, 2009 is the Apple Macintosh 25th anniversary. Back in 1984, they released the first Apple Macintosh. Okay, check that bad boy out. You like that? Look at those pretty little rainbow colors in the background and everything. And in 1984, that was it. That was the computer to have. You needed an Apple Macintosh computer, okay? Now, 25 years later, we've come a very long way, and they look much different, and you can do a lot of different things with them, of course. But the idea behind this saying, just the tip of the iceberg, is that when you see an iceberg, a lot of times what people believe is that there's about 10% of the iceberg that you actually see above the water level. And beneath the water level, there's about 90%. So what you see is just the very beginning. Now, we could apply that same saying to Revelation 6 versus Revelation 8 and 9. Revelation 6 was just the tip of the iceberg. We saw it. If you guys were here about a month ago and we studied the first six seals on the title deed to the earth. You remember what happened? Those first six seals, as Jesus broke open those seals on this scroll, different facets of God's judgment were poured out on the earth. You remember this? It got really, really bad, right? Well, those were just the tip of the iceberg as we reach Revelation 8 through 9. In fact, let me give you an idea of how bad this is going to get. Revelation 8, look at verse 1. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Half an hour of silence in heaven. Think about that. Here we are in heaven. We're worshiping. And as we watch him open up the last of the seven seals on this scroll, the title deed to the earth, we are so blown away by how bad it's about to get that we can't even speak. We're completely speechless. Us and the angels, we're so blown away that for 30 straight minutes, there's complete silence. Revelation 6 was really bad. You guys probably remember it if you read it or you were here for it. Revelation 7, then, you remember, was a breath of fresh air. 2 weeks ago, we studied it. God held back the judgment on the earth. He set into motion his 144,000 sealed servants, and many people began to accept the Lord. It was a great break. Well, I told you, don't get used to that break. And Revelation 8 and 9 is why I said that, because it turns into a real-life nightmare here. God begins to prove over and over again in many ways that he is God, just as he has said that he is. Now, the good thing for all of us in this room, after hearing what's about to happen, is that we don't have to learn it the same way as these people are going to learn it. God is all-knowing and all-powerful, and you're going to see that today. But if you continue to live your life as though he's not, all I can say is, consider yourself warned. Your future lies ahead, and we're going to read about it today. We're going to look today at two different ways that God's judgment was poured out again on the people who are still alive on the earth. Now remember, at this point, the church has been raptured. Those of us who are Christians, when Jesus came back the first time, we are taken to heaven, and we're in heaven with him. Everyone's still alive on earth besides these 144,000 chosen people are people who have rejected Christ. And these servants of the Lord are doing their best to tell them about Christ. Most of them are still rejecting God. So today, we're going to look at two different ways that God's judgment is released. First of all, indirectly. And then we're going to look at it, how it was directly targeted at those who were alive on the earth. We'll start with number one, destructive disasters. Now, things are going to get really bad today. We've already seen some really bad natural disasters. In fact, maybe a more accurate way to say it is supernatural disasters, because these disasters that have happened already have been caused by God supernaturally. Now, remember, everything's quiet in heaven for 30 solid minutes. That's a really long pause. In fact, if you think about it, even here on earth, just a few seconds is awkward. Right? Like that, right? You guys were like, well, I hope he says something soon. This is awkward. You know, what was that, 3 seconds? And you guys were all awkwarded out, you know? 30 minutes in heaven. Now think about this. On earth, every once in a while, it's silent. In our bedrooms, we're sleeping for a few hours. It's silent. In heaven, heaven has never heard silence. From the beginning of time, when God created the angels, they have been worshiping him night and day. We've read so many times about all of the things that the Christians and the angels are saying as they're in front of the Lord. They're bowing on their faces, worshiping God. There have been different points that we've read. There were noises and thunderings happening in the throne room of heaven. There's all of this stuff happening in heaven. And now, the seventh seal is opened. And we are in complete shock at how bad it's going to get. But as quick as the silent comes, it's quickly shattered. Look at chapter 8, verse 2. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. So people are praying and God is receiving their prayers. Verse 5. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and here is where the silence is shattered, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, and lightnings, and an earthquake. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. So the silence didn't last long. And you guys are going to pick up on the fact that there are these seven angels with seven trumpets. And as each one of them blows their trumpet, something bad happens on earth. And I'm sure the people on earth are going to begin to quickly pick up on this as well. So the first trumpet sounds. Look at verse 7. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood. And they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. So a huge hailstorm hits the earth. The first angel blows his trumpet, A huge hailstorm hits. But this wasn't just any hailstorm. First off, probably worse than the earth has ever seen at this point. But it's not just hail. You guys know what hail is. Big chunks of ice falling from the sky, right? But it's not just chunks of ice at this point. It says it was mixed with balls of fire falling out of the sky. If that wasn't bad enough, it says it was mingled with blood. So as these huge chunks of ice fall to the earth, people are running for cover. Cars, windows are getting torn out. Huge balls of ice fall into the earth. Then balls of fire start falling to the earth. It says all of the green grass on the whole earth is burned up. And 1/3 of the earth's trees are destroyed, burned up in a huge forest fire. And it says it's all mingled with blood. There's blood everywhere. Everything's burning. There's melted ice everywhere. It's crazy, crazy bad. All the grass burned, 1/3 of the trees. That's really bad. Now, up until this date right now, the biggest known forest fire that we're aware of happened over 100 years ago in Canada, and it covered over 3 million acres. That's the size of the Gila National Forest in southwest New Mexico, okay? That is a huge forest fire. That's as if the Gila National Forest, the entire thing burned down. 3 million acres. It's a lot. That's a huge fire. Up until today, that's the biggest fire the earth has ever seen. Well, there are estimates that say there are about 400 billion trees right now on the earth. That means if 1/3 of them burns up, that's 132 billion trees that burn, which would look something like this. Suddenly, do you see that little orange dot over there on the United States? That's the biggest known fire that we know today. Suddenly, the biggest fire we've ever seen is completely, it looks like a spark compared to this huge worldwide forest fire that's happening. 1/3 of the earth's trees are burned up. That's just the first trumpet. Check out the second, verse 8. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and 1/3 of the sea became blood. And 1/3 of the living creatures in the sea died, and 1/3 of the ships were destroyed. So a huge meteor hits the earth. And as it hits, it says it turns 1/3 of the earth's oceans into blood. And as it does that, 1/3 of the sea creatures living in the ocean die. And 1/3 of the boats that are all across the world in the water are ravaged, I'm sure, by huge tsunami-style waves that ravish the shores. And as they beat the boats, 1/3 of them are completely destroyed. The blood, 1/3 of it, or the water, 1/3 of the water is turned to blood, and 1/3 of the sea creatures die. Imagine how disgusting the beach would be at this point. Can you even imagine? You go to the beach, you're like, hey, I want to build a sandcastle. You can't. You build blood castles, okay? This is disgusting. You go to the beach and it's no longer pretty. There's no longer clear blue water. It's blood red as it washes to the shore. It's bringing in the bodies of dead sea creatures, dolphins, whales, millions of fish, dead, rotting, washing up on the beach. They're floating everywhere. As you go out in a boat, some of the boats that are still left, you're just going through dead bodies as you're riding through the water. 1/3 of the ocean is just blood, and animals are dead everywhere. Let me remind you, we're only on the second trumpet. The third brings another meteor. Look at verse 10. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, which means it probably has a tail behind it, which makes it probably a comet. You guys have probably seen a comet before. And it fell on 1/3 of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. 1/3 of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. So this meteor or comet, whatever it is, it explodes and poisons 1/3 of the remaining water supply on the earth. As if the water supply wasn't already polluted enough, now there's poison in it. In fact, even it says the springs of water. That means fresh water. That means water that is stored in wells and water reservoirs and storage tanks is poisoned. Probably even water coming out of people's faucets in their homes, they're drinking poison. And it says in verse 11, many men died from the water because it was poisoned. Let me remind you, we're only on the third trumpet. The fourth trumpet brings, the fourth trumpet sounds. Look at verse 12. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. So now the sun, the moon, the stars, they shine one third less. I don't know if that means one third of them don't shine, or they just are a third less bright. I don't know exactly what it means. But either way, we know that the days are shortened. The days are much shorter. There's much less daylight. Because the sun isn't shining as near as much as normal, temperatures would plummet across the earth. Everybody's freezing. Meanwhile, we still have a huge continent-wide probably forest fire going on. All the grass is burned up. Dead floating animals everywhere. This is really, really bad. The earth is being ravaged by destructive disasters. And it just goes to show us, Jesus wasn't kidding in Luke 21 when he predicted thousands of years before this happened that this would happen. Luke 21 says, there will be signs in the sun, this is Jesus speaking, in the moon and in the stars, and on the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them from fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. He says people are going to have heart attacks just from watching what's happening. Just imagine how bad this is going to get. At this point, there is no way people can deny God or the spirit world, especially after verse 13. Check this out. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." I'd probably be saying whoa at this point too. "To the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound." Let me put that in today's language. He's like, dude, you better pay attention. Because if you thought that was bad, giddy up. Buckle up, because it's about to get really bad. He says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa to everyone who's still on earth, because you are about to get it." It's about to get really bad. So suddenly, there is no doubt in anyone's mind that angels exist, that God is behind these disasters. Are you catching on here? God's in control. He's behind all of this. He controls the wind and the waves and the animals and the meteors. He says when they live and when they die and what they do. It's no wonder that I tell you guys every week the importance of being obedient to this God. He's the one in control. It's kind of scary to think what God can do. And yet, it's kind of awesome to think what God can do. He's so powerful. Because if you're obedient, there's never a need to worry. Think about it. If he's in control of the world's oceans and the comets and the trees, then what makes you think he can't handle what's going on in your life? What makes you think your problems are too big for God? If he can take care of all this, I guarantee he's got you taken care of. The earth is very quickly turning into a real life nightmare. But so far, these attacks that we've seen have been indirect. They haven't been directly targeted at the humans. It's mainly been the earth that has been destroyed. And of course, because of that, life on earth has become very hard, poisonous water, etc. But the attacks have been indirect until now. The earth is about to get far, far worse. Actually, the earth isn't going to get worse. Life on earth is about to get far, far worse. Anyone who has denied the spirit world up until this point can no longer do so. Look at chapter 9, verse 1. Then the fifth angel sounded. Of course, we know by this point, when a trumpet sounds, it's never good. And I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth, to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth. And to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth, or any green thing, or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. It brings us to number two, demonic attackers. We saw destructive disasters and now demonic attackers. I don't know about you, but just talking about demons kind of creeps me out. They're just kind of scary things, you know? In fact, it was funny, yesterday I was typing on my computer. I have my feet propped up, I have my computer on my lap, and I was typing, and I literally had just written that sentence, thinking about demons creeps me out. And right after I wrote that, my stomach growled, and I jumped. Because my stomach growled, as if a demon was growling at me or something. Thankfully it wasn't. But you know, demons are everywhere in pop culture. We have movies about them. The Exorcist, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. We had the band called Demon Hunter. Even in the World Trade Center, some people thought that the smoke coming out looked like a demon face. Even Kronk in The Emperor's New Groove had a demon problem, you know? It's everywhere, right? But in reality, demons are much more real than we would like to admit. Now, the good thing is, we don't have to worry about them. According to these verses, it implies that right now, most of the demons are locked up. Eventually, as we just read, they'll be released. But right now, they're locked up. Let's say they weren't. Let's say they were all roaming the earth. 1 John 4:4 tells us that he who is in us is greater than he who is in the world. Romans 8:37 says we are more than conquerors through him who loves us. We have nothing to fear. But it's still somewhat of an intimidating topic. Now, there's a lot of speculation about what John is describing here. Some people believe he's actually talking about locusts that come out of this bottomless pit, swarm the earth, and torture humans. Actual insects, some people believe. Others believe they're insects, but they're demon-possessed. Some people believe that they're not insects or some type of creature that is demon-possessed. That's kind of the way I lean. Other people believe that these insects are actually robots that are being manufactured right now. And as crazy as that sounds, let me tell you about some things that are being built right now in the United States. Tiny, handheld, robotic insects. They're being manufactured right now in the United States. Hayden, Ohio. And these insects are pretty interesting. They believe that this, just like 6 years away, is the future of combat. No longer is it going to be huge, you know, nuclear bombs. They believe that this is going to be how we attack each other. And let me tell you what these things do. As I was reading this news article, it's really fascinating. You guys should check it out. I posted a link to it on the Velocity Revelation blog if you want to check it out. VelocityRevelation.blogspot.com. Check it out. Read through that article. Tell me what you think. But as I was reading this article, it gives a few different scenarios of how these things can be used. Now, let me remind you, this is not future technology. This is happening right now. These things are being built right now, okay? What these things can do, these are little handheld devices. You could fit a few of them in your hand. Very small. Some of them even smaller. Some of them are equipped with cameras. They can be controlled by remote control from different continents. They can go for days on end without their batteries needing to be recharged. So literally what can happen, you can have a few thousand of these that swarm together, fly into an enemy camp with cameras so they can see everything that's happening in the enemy camp. Some of them are equipped with explosive devices. You can fly them in, GPS enabled, drop them exactly pinpointed where you want it, blow up bridges, do whatever you want with these little handheld things. One of the scenarios that it said in this article, it said that some of them are equipped with scanning devices where it can fly into an enemy camp And it can know who the commander of the camp is by scanning their eyes. And as it looks into the patterns of the iris in their eyes, it knows who the commander is, targets him, and will fly itself into their arteries, causing them to bleed out in seconds. This is technology that's available right now. Isn't that insane? Another scenario, it said that these little robotic insects can sneak up in the grass near an enemy camp where a plane is about to take off. And these particular ones will be made out of titanium, so they're very, very hard metal. And so as the enemy fighter jet is about to take off, a swarm of these will swoop up in front of the plane, allow themselves to be sucked into the jet engines, and then since they're made out of titanium, they destroy the engines and crash the fighter plane before it's barely even off the ground. This is technology that's available right now. Now, as crazy as that sounds, I don't really know exactly what John is describing here. But from the description, it sounds as though these are creatures that are certainly demon-possessed. He gives a lot of descriptions here, and you can tell he uses the word like a lot. You can tell he couldn't even put into words what he was seeing. A lot of people think that he's describing future technology that he didn't even know how to describe. But as this fifth trumpet sounds, God takes the punishment further than it's ever gone up until this point. Because it's no longer indirect judgment through nature. Now, the humans who are alive on the earth are directly targeted and attacked. In fact, he commands these demon-possessed creatures not to touch the earth. Don't harm the grass or the trees or any living thing except for those humans who do not have the seal of God. You know those 144,000 sealed servants are pretty thankful for their seal at this point. Because they're not harmed, but everyone else is. God remains in control the whole time. Even when the demons are released. He's always been in control. That's evidenced by the fact that he, in verse 1 of chapter 9, hands over the keys to release the demons. He gives the keys to Satan. He's been holding them. He locked them up. He's in control. And now he says, the time has come, they can be released. And he hands over the keys to Satan to do what Satan has probably wanted to do since the beginning, since he started tempting Adam and Eve. Release the demons onto the earth. Now, I want you guys to just stop real quick. Think about where we're at. Devastating earthquakes unlike the earth has ever seen. Meteor showers, natural disasters. A third of the earth's water is poisoned and bloody. Dead sea creatures floating everywhere. All the grass is burned up. A third of the trees, the sun, the moon, the stars are shining less. Temperatures around the earth plummeting. Things are really bad. And now it gets far worse because Satan releases the demons to infest the earth. And their whole goal is to just torture the humans who are alive. God demonstrates his power in a pretty interesting way. He makes two groups invincible. Now, normally that would sound pretty cool, right? Like, I'm invincible. I'm like a superhero with a cape, you know? That's what you think of course, when you think of invincible. At this point, being invincible is a punishment. They feel the pain, but they can't die. Check this out. The first group, humans, are invincible. You think that's cool? Wait till you read verse 6. In those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. They are in such agonizing pain from these scorpion-like demonic creatures that are torturing them that the only thing they can think to do is kill themselves. People begin attempting suicide more than has ever happened in all of history, but something crazy happens. They can't die. They can't die. They're being tortured by these horrible demonic creatures, and they can't escape the pain for 5 months straight. That's here to the beginning of June. 5 months straight, tortured, and they can't escape it. Suddenly, as they try to kill themselves, bullets don't kill any longer. Nooses don't suffocate them any longer. Knives don't cut deep any longer. They jump off of buildings, and instead of dying, they just cripple themselves. And while they're laying on the ground, agonizing from self-inflicted wounds, these demonic creatures are torturing them while they're there for 5 months straight. Verse 7, look at a further description of these guys. The shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. Now pay attention to how many times he uses the word like. He obviously is having a hard time describing what he's seeing. On their heads were crowns of something like gold. And their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth. And they had breastplates like breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. Finally, the 5 month mark is up. And as quickly as these creatures appeared, they're gone. But it's not over yet. Because now the tides turn. The sixth trumpet is about to blast, and death begins to set in for the humans. Now the tides change, and the demons are invincible. A new army of demons is released. Look at verse 13. Then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, "Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates." Now, we're about to read about these angels, but I don't want you guys to get confused here. I don't want you to think that these four angels are good, godly angels, because you'll be able to tell they are the leaders of this demonic army. These are obviously angels who had fallen, who had rejected God, and maybe a better term would be demons. Verse 15. So the four angels, or demons, who had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year, so if you add that all together, it's about 13 months, over a year, were released to kill a third of mankind. Now the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million. 200 million demons are released. I heard the number of them. Verse 17, and thus I saw the horses in the vision. Those who sat on them had breastplates of fiery red, hyacinth blue, and sulfur yellow. And the heads of the horses were like the heads of lions. Out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and brimstone. By these three plagues, a third of mankind was killed, by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone, which came out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails. For their tails are like serpents having heads, and with them they do harm. So death finally kicks in for the humans. Hundreds of millions of humans begin dying. Now again, there's no way to know exactly how many people are on earth at this time, but we can make estimates with what we have right now. Right now on the earth, about 6.6 billion people alive. We've done some of this math before. You guys probably remember back to the fourth seal, 1/4 of the earth's population died. 1.65 million people. If we looked at a map, that's the combined population of North America, South America, Australia, and Europe. We only have as many people left on the earth as currently live in Asia and Africa now. 4.95 billion people still alive. Well, this army is released. They're on the earth tormenting humans, killing them for 13 months. And this demonic army kills a third of the population that's still left. Which, if you do the math, that's about 1.23 billion people that they put to death. Which means only 3.7 billion people remain. Which, if you look at a map, now the combined population of North America, South America, Australia, Europe, Africa, and part of Asia is all dead. We only have about 80% of the people living in Asia left. By this point, the earth's population has almost been cut in half. And people are dying in the worst possible ways you can imagine. Look at verse 18. By these three plagues, a third of mankind was killed. By the fire and the smoke and the brimstone, or this is, brimstone is like sulfuric gas, which came out of their mouths. Talk about bad breath. My goodness. These people are burned to death, suffocated by smoke, and poisoned by sulfuric gas. That's how they're dying. Speaking of fire and brimstone from verse 18, we're going to read later on in Revelation 19, 20, and 21, an interesting description of hell. It describes it as a place of fire and brimstone. I find that pretty ironic because the people who are still alive at this point on the earth have decided that they hate God so much that they will never turn their lives to Him. They know He's real. They've felt the consequences. They've seen angels. They've felt demons. They know it's all real. At this point, they've said, I want to go to hell. I will follow Satan. That's what they've said. And it's as if God says, you want hell? I'll bring it to earth then. And on earth, they die a hellish death. And then they spend eternity burning and being tormented the same way they died on earth. Horrible, horrible, torturous pain. The craziest and the saddest part of Revelation 9 is how it ends. Look at verse 20. But the rest of mankind who are not killed by these plagues, so the 3.7 billion people who are still alive, rejecting God, did not repent of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold, silver, brass, stone, and wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk. And they did not repent of their murders or their sorceries or their sexual immorality or their thefts. They know God is real. They're feeling His wrath, and they purposely, to His face, tell Him that they hate Him. We're going to read later on, the plagues continue to get worse. And it says they blaspheme God. In other words, they curse God, tell Him how horrible He is, and commit their lives to following Satan. The earth has turned into a real life nightmare. Maybe you guys have seen the previews. Maybe you've seen the movie already. Bedtime Stories. You guys know what I'm talking about? Adam Sandler? Okay. The idea is Adam Sandler starts to tell his nephew and niece bedtime stories, but they start to come to life. Like his nephew says, and then it started raining gumballs. And the next day, it rains gumballs, which would be pretty cool unless you didn't have an umbrella, because those would probably hurt coming out of the sky, right? But the idea is, as he's telling them these stories, they're coming to life. So I started thinking, well, what if the things I'm telling my daughter before bed start coming to life? You know, like this might not be good. What if the DVDs she's watching start coming to life? This could be really bad, right? Especially because she loves Elmo. That could be creepy, right? Nightmares coming to life, right? What if Cruella De Vil became a real person? And my house was filled with 101 little puppies just yapping everywhere. Nightmares, right? I swear, if I ever run across a pig or a spider who talk, it's all over. The end has come, okay? My nightmare has come upon me. Now, I'm not too worried about those things actually coming to life. But I can tell you that the Bible is not just another bedtime storybook. Every night before Emery goes to bed, we read her a story out of the Bible. She has this little kid's Bible, and she always, Bible, Bible. So we read her a Bible story. We just started in Genesis, and we read about the flood and that kind of thing. But I never want her to grow up thinking that those are just bedtime stories that you read alongside Green Eggs and Ham and The Cat in the Hat, you know? Those things aren't going to happen. But the Bible is different because it's telling exactly what will happen. And there are a lot of people who are going to read this, who are going to hear about it, and who will purposely reject it. God is in full control. And I know you guys can see that. But the world would love for us to think that hell is like this eternal party. It is so not a party. It's a place of eternal torment, created for Satan and his demons. Humans were never meant to go to hell. But because people choose to reject God, that's where they end up. Don't be stubborn like these people and have to learn hands-on. All you have to do to get to heaven is commit your life to Jesus. He has taken the pain and the death that you deserved so that you could have free access to heaven. And if that's where you want to spend eternity versus hell, then you have to commit your life to Jesus. There's no other option. Don't be stubborn like these people and walk out of here not doing anything about it. Today could be your last day. You better get right while you still have a chance. Let's pray. Jesus, today I ask that you'd speak to our hearts. Help us to be committed to following you. I pray for anyone in here who does not know you, who's not following you, Lord, that today that would change. They would recognize you are in control. There's never a need to worry when we're on your side. And I pray that the lives of these students would be different. They would be strong. God, bless these students as they read through the Bible, some of them in 90 days. It's going to be challenging. There will be times that they feel discouraged, but Lord, I pray you'd keep them going strong, excited to see what else you have in store. We look forward to learning more from you, Lord, and I pray that you'd help our lives to be lived as a witness for you. In your name we pray, amen. You guys have a great rest of the Sunday.